Tonight, we're not having our traditional lecture or slideshow or something else like that. We are continuing a series that we've done just occasionally called This Is Us, where we share some of our stories. And, you know, one of my favorite hymns when I grew up singing, "This is my story, this is my song, praising my Savior all the day." Let's come on. No, we won't sing it tonight, but Paul knows it. I know, play it for us. But partly that song is and that story is that we tell others what Christ means to us. Other times that story is who we are, who God has created us to be. Some of the experiences that God and our family of faith have allowed us to enjoy, and so all that goes into the story that we share and the story that we tell. So you'll recall that shortly after I came on board as your pastor, Dan Bagby and I sat on the stage in the fellowship hall while he grilled me for sort of a This Is Us. We talked with some families about some of their spiritual practices. We talked with the Gray family. Do y'all remember some of these where we shared our stories together? Tonight, we have a wonderful opportunity to hear from the Miller family. You'll know Anna Perry Miller, our new associate pastor, and Maggie Beth, and Dean Miller. You're going to get to know a little bit more about them tonight and hear some of their story. I'm going to try to ask them some leading questions to pull it out of them for you tonight, but hopefully they'll take that in a direction that they want to try to share some of their story. So, I am not by nature an interviewer. Mike Klingenpiel did a much better job than I may tonight. He had a background in journalism, but I did have some help in composing some questions. So we'll get started in sharing some of our stories tonight. So I'll ask with Anna and Dean to start with, and y'all are both, yeah. Your time's coming, girl. that you're both ministers. If you could tell us a little bit about your growing up, where that took place, and then skip ahead and tell us a little bit about why you decided on ministry, of all things you could do with your life, how that call came to you. If you can share a little bit of that, whoever wants to go first, take the mic and have at it.
Hold it and go back and forth. Okay, I'll go ahead and go. I was born in Oklahoma, but I'm a Virginia girl. I was born there because my dad was in the military, and then within a year, we were back here in Virginia, and I lived in several places around the state. as a teenager, I was in Waynesboro, Virginia, and graduated from high school there, and left and went to Averitt College, which is where I met Dean, and we married, and so I need to back up a little bit, because I went through a lot of years really fast, but yeah.
But it's your story, so tell it how you want.
But the other piece of the question was about
some of your call. You're growing up, and then, well, if you'd like to share maybe some of the, it may help to feed into the call question if you tell us some of that, maybe that religious background of your growing up.
I went to church from the time we got back to Virginia, at least. I don't know what my parents did when they were in Oklahoma. But my grandfather was a minister in a Church of Christ in the Norfolk area. And so we were there all the time. We lived within a mile away, and my grandmother would have made sure that we were there. So we went there the whole time I was a child, and when my parents both remarried, my dad married a lady who was a Baptist, and so we shifted over to a Baptist church. As a 12-year-old, I accepted Christ at the Church of Christ at the end of a Bible school because the lesson was geared towards helping you know that if you didn't become a Christian to get baptized, you were going to go to hell. And I said, I asked my grandmother if that was indeed true. And she said, of course it is. And I said, well, let's fix that. And she said, how about Sunday? And I said, that sounds great. So my grandfather baptized me in his church, in their church. And at 14, I was going to a Baptist church because their youth minister lived as our neighbor when we moved. And that was my stepmother's upbringing. So that we had kind of made that shift. And I got to go to camp with them and learned there that this was one of those moments where a light came on and something became new and real for the first time. And that was that Jesus cared enough about me that it wasn't just about not wanting to go to hell, that it was about God wanting to be a part of every day of my life and wanting me to walk faithfully and knowing that God would always be faithful to me as well. And so when I realized that, then everything shifted, and I wanted to do it, and I wanted to follow, and I wanted to be faithful, and I wanted to figure that out, because then it mattered to me in a whole different way. I had adults who were very active in my life when I was a teenager who listened and who helped guide me through lots of things about being in a blended home, and I was uncertain where I would have been if their leadership and my faith hadn't been a part of my life. And so I very much wanted to be able to extend those same things to someone else, to say, there is someone who won't ever leave you or forsake you. There is someone who will be faithful. And I'd like to tell you how that was true for me. So I began feeling like the best avenue to do that would be through youth ministry, and so I went to college fully intending that I was headed to ministry. So,
I was born and raised in Virginia Beach, a much older brother and sister, and than me, been in church entire life, parents grew up in the church as well, was kind of even at a young age, was, you know, every time the doors were open, we were there. Parents were very active. I accepted Christ at a young age, 7 years old, like a lot of you have and other children, and was kind of just, I was the kid of the church, you know. Every time the doors opened, we were there. Born and raised, came up through the church, and then as I became a teenager, kind of like Anna in the sense of felt like there was more to it and trying to figure out what all this Christian thing meant. And I forget how old it was. I was somewhere around 18 or so, getting ready to graduate high school, or I just graduated high school, and was doing construction. I worked construction for about 4 years before going off to college. And a new pastor came to the church, and I got involved with their family, and he's the one who noticed my calling before I did. He's the one who just kind of asked the question, because I was working with the youth. As an 18-year-old, I was the youth leader of the church, and he just kind of assumed that I was going off to school, and I was like, yeah, no, I'll work construction, and life's good, you know. And after about a year and a half or so of him kind of gently tapping on the shoulder, I had a little bit of an epiphany myself, working on a job site by myself, on Sandbridge Beach. I was able to go to work early, and I kind of went to the beach instead of to work, and sat on the beach that week, or that one particular day. Just the porpoise were playing all in the water, and I was just enthralled and watching them. And I did that for about 3 days. I'd go to the beach, I'd kind of have some moments, wasn't really sure what was happening, but I was kind of questioning a lot, and then I'd work a little bit, then I'd go back to the beach, and after about 4 days, my boss came and said, are you okay? It's like, well, he's like, because you haven't done anything at all this week, and something's going on. So I explained to him that I was just kind of wondering whether I needed to be working in the church. Because I was working with the youth group, I was kind of struggling between, I really wanted to work more with the youth than I did doing construction. My boss was a Christian man. He's like, I know it's happening here, and I don't need to be in the way of this. So if you feel like you need to leave and go work in the church, you need to do that. Otherwise, you're going to ruin my business because God's, you know, kind of thing. So the church then hired me that summer as their youth minister, and then I went off to college. And so I had a lot of encouragement, not only from that pastor, but from my parents who, and other members of the church who were just kind of saying, finally, you know, you finally came around to knowing, to seeing what we've seen for a while, and went off thinking the same as Anna, kind of youth ministry.
Yeah. Well, you've got construction to fall back on if this ministry doesn't work out for you.
Just in case.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, Anna, if you weren't a minister, what do you think you'd do with your professional life?
I would probably be a starving artist.
Really?
Yeah, I would probably. I would have loved to have gone to art school.
More starving or more artist?
Hopefully more artist than starving.
Sure.
But probably an artist.
Interesting. Maggie Beth, I like you, I'm a minister's kid. Mm-hmm. I'm not a double minister's kid. Though I do have a stepmother who's also a minister, but lots of ministers in my family. And I can say that it's a lot of pressure on us growing up sometimes, a lot of assumptions people make. Like you're the one to pray in the youth group sometimes, you know, they look to you and like you'll have the answers, et cetera. But a lot of that is impressed upon us as ministers' kids. So what's really important, I think, is not that we just take the faith of our parents or of the vocations of our parents, but to make that faith our own. So I'm curious if you've had some experiences, either in church or mission trips or family trips, or experiences where you felt your own faith growing or becoming real, or can you know what I'm getting at?
Yeah.
You can talk about that a little bit.
About 3 years ago, I think, we went on a mission trip to Haiti. Was that 3 years ago? Okay. And we went and worked at an orphanage. And it was just really cool to see how, like, the kids, they didn't have anything, but they still, like, were always so happy, and they were always, like, in good moods, and they were excited to be able to hang out with people that wanted to do with them.
Mm-hmm.
So.
What were some of the things that you did on that trip, too? How old were you when you did?
I was 13, I think, 12 or 13.
Mm-hmm.
And
what were some of your jobs on that trip?
We went and we really just spent a lot of time hanging out with the kids. We were, like, setting up parts of the school for them to be able to learn and, you mm-hmm. know, get some education. And so we just were spending time with the kids and playing games and stuff with them.
So what was the – that sounds like a lot of fun. What were some of the faith connections, though? I mean, what made that not just a family trip, but, you know, a trip that had some mission and some purpose for you?
Well, I said that we got to just see how happy the kids always were, and you could just really see God shining through them and how happy they were to be able to hang out with people who cared about them.
Yeah. I appreciate your telling me about that. I think for many of us, that is sometimes when we get outside of the walls of our church or get outside of our comfort zone, we can tend to grow in those ways. I also have some just for fun questions that I'm going to sprinkle in here that may be non sequiturs, but just to try to keep things light and engaging. So, Maggie Beth, and then I'll ask your parents too, if you didn't physically have to sleep anymore,
oh boy.
What would you do with all that extra time?
I would probably find some hobby to do that would make that time enjoyable and not just sitting around being bored. I don't know what I would
do. Do you have an idea of what you do?
I'd probably do, like, arts and stuff, arts and, like, crafts and stuff. Like, she does that, too.
If you didn't need to sleep, paint the night away?
I don't know if I could do that.
Okay.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
There you go. Dean, Anna, if you didn't have to sleep anymore, what'd you do with all that time?
I hope that my house would not be cleaner, that I wouldn't spend all the extra time doing what I'm not doing now, that I would do something fun with the time, mm-hmm. and that I would do something that I would really enjoy. Of course, I would do things that were artistic, but and hopefully I would exercise a little more. But the nice thing is, when I think about that question, I think I would probably do a lot of more of the things that I already am involved in, which is actually kind of cool. So.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same way. I would continue to do more traveling and meeting a whole bunch of new and different people and having those experiences and relaxing out in the yard.
Yeah. Well, I want to go back to something that, you know, Maggie Beth brought up, and that was how a time of trip, a mission trip, an experience was so memorable for her and so impressionable in her own faith journey. I know, Anna, you've largely worked within the church. Dean, you've done some of both, and your work at the BGAV has taken you all over the world. Maybe could you tell us a little bit about that work and also some of those experiences that have not just been work for you, but have been, you know what I mean, have really been impressionable in terms of seeing God at work or exciting in that way.
Yeah, so I work at the Baptist General Association of Virginia, which our church, has been a part of since its founding. So in the old structure of Southern Baptist, you have your church, your local church, your local association, your state level, and then your national level. And in that old structure, so I work for the state level, the BGAV, and I've been there for 20 years this year. I just realized so, and I've always, except for a 3-year stint, I've always been in the missions area. I came on doing our mission camps, which are much like Passport, that I know River Road's very much involved with, and we've partnered with them before. In fact, we went to seminary with David and Colleen when they first started Passport. So I started off doing camps, and then I worked in disaster response and leadership development and then community development, and kind of touched on all of those, and now I serve as the team leader for the mission development staff. And what we do, in a nutshell, is help coordinate and plan partnerships to help local churches connect to places that they might not have a normal connection. So we won't do as much locally, because hopefully you'll have a somewhat normal local connection. Mm-hmm. But we make connections internationally and in spaces and places, and like in disaster response, where a local church doesn't have a natural connection outside of itself, to be able to help that church seek out its mission and seek out its call and respond in a positive way. So I get to coordinate the staff that do that. And my work does take me a lot of places all over the world, and I'm very fortunate to represent the BGAV in a lot of those places, and have had many encounters. In fact, most of my, probably, if I were to list my top 10 spiritual moments maybe in my life, probably mm-hmm. 7 of those took place outside of the U.S. With our partners, with our Baptist friends and other Christian friends around the world in their settings, in their locations. And like you said, when you're out of your comfort zone and out of the familiar, you're just more naturally open to, I think, seeing God in different faces and hearing God differently. And probably one of the most memorable ones that challenged me the most was in 2003, December of 2003, when the tsunami came across Indonesia and just devastated. We have a partnership, or had a partnership at that time, with the India Baptist Convention. And we worked, we were asked by the India Baptist Convention to come and respond, to help them respond, because as the tidal wave tsunami hit Indonesia and traveled east and devastated Indonesia, it also traveled west. and went across the southern tip of India and did a lot of devastation that didn't really make the news. And so we were asked by the India Baptist Convention to come and work with them. So I went over several weeks after the tsunami and witnessed the level of destruction and death that I can't, it's just hard to describe. One of the, as we were going around visiting some of the towns that had been destroyed and just seeing everything leveled, people who used to live on the beach as fishermen who have had nothing anymore. We came across, we went in this little town and there was a huge group of people and they were witnessing this beautiful sand sculpture that was taking place in between these buildings. And it was a beautiful, it was a sand sculpture. It was probably 20 feet long. And we watched them and I said, what's going on here? What's happening? Because the emotions, and what I found out was we were standing on the grave of 200 children who had lost their lives in that tsunami and were buried there. I left that scene and went back to where I was staying, climbed up on the roof, climbed up on the water tower on top of the roof, and literally for the rest of the night until 6 o'clock in the morning, just had an argument with God about what have I seen, why, and I kept on getting interrupting because in India, whenever a Hindu priest decides it's time for a parade, doesn't matter what time of night, he calls for a parade, they break out the elephants, and they make all the noise, and a parade goes down the street. So at 2:30 in the morning, there's this parade. New York never sleeps. The country of India never sleeps. When there's a billion people around, it's hard for it to be quiet. And so a Hindu parade happened. So I had an argument with God about, what do I do with this? You know? And then about an hour and a half later, it was time for the Muslim prayers. So I hear the imam come over the big loudspeaker calling people. I'm like, okay, God, what do I do with that? You know? And just back and forth. And then at about 5:30 in the morning, where we stayed in India, what we supported was another orphanage. About 5:30 in the morning, all the children wake up. And they wake up and they start singing hymns. And they start singing Jesus Loves Me. And I'm like, what do I do with this? And it was just one of those moments that I don't know if there's any resolution to it, but it was just this back and forth with me and God, me mostly asking, complaining. I don't know if I've ever gotten any answers, but that was just one of those powerful moments where I saw Christ in a lot of ways and expressed in a lot of different fashions.
That is an amazing story to tell us, and I can't help but have an impact in how you see your own relationship with God, but also with creation and all of God's children. Let me lighten it up a little bit.
Sorry.
That's okay. And Maggie Beth, what is the most annoying habit your mama has?
I was waiting for you to say my brothers. I was ready.
You can say your brothers, but they're not here to defend themselves. So
okay, she does this thing where you know this one, it's fine. So she does this thing where if she's sitting there and you're like hugging her or something, she does this thing where she types like she's on a computer. It drives me crazy because I sit there and I always like tap her. And I'm like, you have to stop doing that because she's sitting there like.
Oh, she taps on you and
yes, it's like she because she's like typing what she's thinking, like she's on a computer. It's weird.
She's saying, I love you.
No, she's not.
Okay.
It drives me crazy when you do
that. Oh,
I like that question.
I was, as I was trying to think of that question, I had a lot of answers I thought you might come up with. I didn't guess that one. I told you these will be non sequiturs here. Annie, you started out talking about there were some people very influential in your maturation as a young adult and as a minister. You talked about your parents and your grandparents. There have been some other key influential people that perhaps saw ministry in you, called out gifts in you, helped you to evolve in your understanding of your own identity as a minister or your own growth in faith. In other words, what role have some other people played in that journey? If you'll talk to us a little bit about that.
When I was in senior high, my youth minister played a very big role in encouraging me to take on roles in leadership with our youth group, but also in the life of our church. I was probably one of the very few teenagers who actually showed up for church business meetings. Not sure what they promised me. But no. The adults who worked with our youth were highly invested, and they spent a lot of time. If I needed to talk, then they were ready to listen. And they let me, I think that was a huge part of actually gaining health as a teenager who was going through family stuff, and somebody being willing to hear it and listen and give it some credibility. Mm-hmm. And tell me it was going to be okay, that I was going to be okay, that God was with me in the middle of it. They also encouraged me to take on leadership roles, and when we had Youth Sunday, when we had a youth leadership team, in those kinds of ways, they encouraged me to lead. And when I expressed to them, this was a church that is pretty conservative now. They've left the BGAV. They're coming back. But they never told me that I couldn't serve. When I wanted to help preach on Youth Sunday, they didn't tell me I couldn't do that. They blessed me. They affirmed that and offered words of blessing afterwards. Whenever I tried anything in the life of the church, they blessed that. And I would say across the way, of course, teachers, but colleagues have been a tremendous source of blessing in that they allowed me, there's been grace to grow and to not be perfect, but to work together and support each other's strengths and draw out each other's strengths, but also to trust each other, that they would invite me into their life in a trust and would then also affirm my gifts, and that together we would create something in the way that we felt like God put us together for. So that's been a blessing.
I appreciate that. I'd like to ask each of you, or any of you, I should say, that would want to share this. If our faith is to be real, it's not simply a Sunday morning from 11 to noon enterprise, but it's a way we seek to live that out throughout the week, either through service or devotional time or what have you. I'm curious how your faith sort of impacts your day-to-day life, or how do you live that out? How do you try to live that out? I know that's a tough question, but I'm curious, because we all do that differently, I think.
I think because of the experiences I've been able to have with a vast array of people, not just Baptists, but Christians in many different contexts, I think it's afforded me the the eyes to see people really for who they are, and not make assumptions about who they are. But be able to look at them and to want to hear their story, rather than to assume what that story might be or to assume something about them just because I've heard something about them from others. Being able to go into a relationship, even if it's just a very brief conversational relationship, but being able to go into it with, I can't say I've always done it, but without making those assumptions allows you to hear differently from a person. I think to hear it more honestly. And I think it's been a big benefit to me to be able to, because if I hear somebody that way, then I'm able to really hear their heart better, I think, than
in
the way
sense.
That they're talking.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's been one of the blessings that's that I've been afforded by the relationships that I've been able to have. So
okay.
I think that's one of the ways that that I'm just continuously reminded of that we're all God's children, and to make an assumption about somebody because of where they live or any of those kinds of things. If you can put that away, it allows mm-hmm. you to see people more like I think God would want you to see them.
Right.
Nope. Keep thinking. I've never thought of faith really as something that, as long as I can remember, really, is something that was quarantined to Sundays or to Sunday mornings during worship.
Mm-hmm.
Because I have felt like the relationship is something that is a part of me now. And that, and as I have seen across years, the way that God has provided and taken care of me and the ways that God has allowed me in to be useful, it has helped. It's helped me be in touch with the fact that hopefully all of the things of service come out of a place of gratitude. I'm so thankful for the things that God has done, for the ways that God has been faithful, for the ways that I can look at specific moments and realize that was an encounter that was, that made a real difference. That there's such a sense of gratitude that that I hope flows through everything.
Mm.
Except for when I'm driving.
Okay. That, we may come back to that. This is a question I like to ask folks. If you could know the exact day and hour of your death, would you want to know why or why not? If we somehow had that technology, we could say, this is the day or and the hour. Would you want to know?
No.
Why not?
Because I would just be worrying about it all the time. Even though I know it's not coming soon, hopefully.
In which we died?
I still wouldn't want to know.
The manner, which I doubt, I would be like.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
I still wouldn't want to know.
No, the. I guess knowing the manner might allow you to avoid. Yeah. The way to try to get out of that one, but no. Yeah. So Maggie Beth, for you, that'd just be too much to bear.
Oh, yeah.
Think so?
I would not want to know. The only reason that I would sort of wish I could know is because I would love to, I guess part of the reason I wouldn't want to know is because I would be so urgent all the time. But part of the reason of knowing is that you probably should be living that urgently all the time anyway. So, yeah. So I really wouldn't want to know.
Mm-hmm. That's right. I'm curious. Most folks say they don't want it. Would anybody want to know? You would, Bill? Me too. Anybody else think they'd want to know? Vivian? Yeah, because I'd want to spend it all right before. No, but I've thought, you know, that might be good information to have. Most everyone I meet and I ask that question, they say absolutely not. So I don't know if everyone else is wrong or. Yeah, that's right. You say, well,
have fun.
So, yeah. Either way, it's a burden, and either way, Anna's throwing a party. So, all right. So, you know, we talk about to go back to my previous question before that. Our faith certainly is much more than a Sunday morning, Wednesday night, et cetera, kind of journey. But certainly the faith community and its impact on us does make a difference in our growing as people of faith. So let's flip that question. One was, you know, how do you seek to live out your faith during the week? But how has being a part of your faith, being a part of the faith community, helped sort of shape you? I'm not speaking necessarily of this church or any one particular church, but that experience, perhaps, or maybe it is a specific instance, but that experience of being a faith community, how does that play in? For any of you who want to answer that,
I would say as a young person, there were lots of people in the church who filled a role of family for me, that God used them in that sort of a way. And I've been very grateful for the ways the church has shown up and been there in those ways when I needed it. The church teaches me an awful lot about myself, about good things and not so good things. Ways that I need to grow and stretch, and ways that I'm uncomfortable, as well as giving an example of some of the finest ways to live out your faith and represent Christ. When you see someone else being Christ-like, it's very formative and shapes you a lot. So,
yeah, it's challenging in that way.
Yeah, I think I've always been a part of a faith community. So my home church and then on through college and seminary. And at times, especially when there have been difficult times in my life, you know, I always had the church or people from the church who I knew were there. And sometimes I find it difficult to put myself in people's shoes who don't have that faith community, because I don't know how they make it sometimes. Now, I know they have good friends, but I know a lot who don't. I know there's a lot in the church who don't feel like they have that either. But for me, having that faith community is, it's not just about learning about God. It is about family. And it's a big family. And even when... fun fact, so I had a heart attack about 10 months ago, and I was amazed at how many phone calls and emails and text messages I received from friends around the world who had somehow found out and who had their nations, National Baptist Unions, praying for my family. And the comfort that brought, knowing that that, you know, people really do care about you, you know, most of the time. Yeah. And so that whole faith element is much more than the Sunday, Wednesday, and it really is family. It's about your whole core.
Yeah.
Mm.
No, thanks.
Maggie Beth, I got a question for you. What are some of those small things that happen that let you know it's going to be a good day? the small things that brighten your day?
In the mornings, I go into school and I hang out in the cafeteria before I go to class, and I just get to hang out and like have fun conversations with my friends, and it just kind of makes me wake up in the morning and puts me in a good mood.
So if you missed that, it's going to be a different kind of day.
Probably.
There you go. Yeah.
I was hoping you'd say breakfast that I fixed you. Or... Mm.
Whoops.
Whoops. Yeah. 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 I'll ask the others of you, are there, no, that's necessarily a faith question, though it could be. What are some of those small things that maybe aren't so small things that brighten your day? She's
Oops.
So humble.
Oops. Starting the day with coffee is a really good beginning, especially after fixing breakfast for my daughter. When it's a sunny day, I realize more right now than I have in a long time how very much that makes a day good. But I love to sleep with the windows open and to hear birds and nature waking up outside. Or music, even in the morning, and those noises, those sounds, make my day start off really well. That may sound silly, but I love the sounds of outdoors.
Mm. I grew up stone's throw from downtown, so I need an ambulance to go by, you know, to sleep. It's funny, we go to Andrea's folks' house. They live in the country outside of Louisville, Kentucky. Inevitably, the first morning after we spent the night, Andre wakes up. I slept so wonderfully, and I'm sitting there bleary-eyed because the grasshoppers, the crickets, whoever, all the bugs kept me up all night. So can't do it, can't do it. But, Dean, I'll ask you that question. If you have an answer, some of the small things that...
Yeah, since we've moved, about 2 years ago, we moved out of the... almost 3 years, whatever it was. So we lived near the in Godwin area. And so we moved up to out to western Hanover County. And we're out a little bit. And so and now again, the sun is pretty important. But the way that it rises in our backyard, especially in the wintertime when there's little leaves on the trees, and the sun is coming up through that forested area. You know, that's a good morning and coming out. And in the mornings when it's not frigid, but crisp outside, is just that nice big deep breath of fresh air. And then for me, also driving into work, it's about 20-25 minutes, and driving back, I'm able to kind of either prepare myself for the day, or as I'm coming back home, just kind of let everything from the office go in that time. So I listen to the radio or music or put the windows down and just drive and kind of have that 20 minutes of as long as nobody cuts in front of me and, you know, does something stupid.
Sure. Last question, because our time is coming to an end here. So much of our faith journey and life with God and church family, hopefully, is comforting to us and helps us to grow and develop. But certainly a large part of our faith journey, if we're honest, is doubt, struggle, questioning. I'm curious for the three of you, if you have an answer, some of those questions or struggles that... Dean, you alluded to it in your time in India. Maybe pulling at that thread a little bit, what are some of those struggles or questions that you have? And we all do, and sometimes it's helpful to share those and understand that we all have some of those questions that sort of gnaw at our hearts or keep us up at night. It's a little heavy to end on, but... But you know, if as I say, if we're honest, that is as much part of our faith as anything else.
So I guess one struggle or doubt is, you know, why doesn't everybody believe like me? It would just be easy if we didn't have any differences. You know, no, I'm just kidding. So my father passed away about 22 years ago, died of cancer, fairly young. And my dad was that quiet mentor. I mean, he was very active in the church. In fact, for about a year and a half or 2 years after my dad had died, the church kept on finding things that weren't being done, and they couldn't figure out why wasn't it being done, and then they'd finally trace it back and find out, oh, Adam Miller used to do that but never told anybody. So, I mean, for about a month, the church, they'd come in on Monday morning and the church would be unlocked. They'd go, why is it? Because they never realized that my dad stayed after church every Sunday and locked up the entire building. Nobody else did it. And for a month, they kept on figuring out, why is the building unlocked? And they realized, oh, wait a minute, Adam used to do that. And they found about a dozen things like that. Mm. And that's how my dad practiced his faith. It was very, very quiet, very under the radar. And he was a very practical man. And I get a lot of that from him. So, and I say that because, you know, I question why did he lose his life that early and wasn't able to see my children.
Yeah.
And to continue to share his life with me and with my kids and all, because it was, it was too early. And I know a lot of other people who are just downright hateful people that live to be 103. And you're like, what? You know?
Yeah.
You know? And so it just makes you wonder sometimes about that. Nobody here. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. Just, you know.
Uh-huh. That's all right. Every one of you just named somebody in your head. It's all right. I thought I heard an amen in the back, so... No, thanks for sharing that. Megbeth or Anna, do you want to answer that? What are some of them?
Okay. I think the struggle that I have and the struggle that Dean has is probably the struggle that most people have is trying to make sense of how God works and how God doesn't work. How God chooses to act or doesn't choose to act. Is able to act, isn't able to act, however you come at it, we don't have all the answers. And that's the one thing that we are clear about, is that it doesn't all make sense. And so there are just things that we will never understand in this life, and we just have to see enough of God's goodness to keep trusting. And for me, probably one of the things I struggle with right now is I just keep asking God, how are you getting anything done? I mean, truly, I look around and Christians are every color and shape and belief and kind and not kind and believe this or believe that. And there are such loud voices out there that are even so counter to what I think even represent Christ at all. And I think when all this is out there and this is how we're all representing you and it all looks different, how in the world are people supposed to make sense of that? And if they are struggling with that, we should be more accountable than they are, you know? I mean, it's a hard thing to wonder about and how to do something effective and helpful in the midst of all of it. And think I'm right about how I'm doing it.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. I don't know that I thought it in specifically those terms, but that's a great question and certainly an interesting thing to struggle with. ahead.
I was going to say, sorry, he chose the last question to be so serious.
Well, no, I do have one more, and it's for you. I guess, what's your story? You have a story. You have an important one, and it's, yes, it is woven into the story, which is River Road Church, but it's also yours, one that God has given you. And I hope that through the living out of your faith, you will consider telling that in some form or fashion, whether it is through a friend over lunch or sharing it with your children or grandchildren. You may think, oh, they don't want to hear my story, but I've had a ball tonight hearing the story of Anna and Maggie Beth and Dean. And I think because God has given us each our own story, I think it's incumbent upon us to share that, not in a I have arrived or look at me kind of way, but in a if I can be a blessing to you, then so be it. So I'll encourage you to give some thought to that. Shall we express our thanks to the Miller family for tonight? So friends, that will conclude our time together tonight. Thank you for being here. Say your prayers before bed. Good night.